Greetings to all across the multiverse. Welcome to the show. I am your host, the Magic Man Sam, broadcasting from the Cloud Post, and you are listening to Magic People, a podcast that goes behind the cardboard and talks with the humans that love this wonderful game. Last week's episode was wonderful, an intellectual discussion about magic, friendships, and dressing spiffy with the one and only professor of the Tolarian Community College. This week, we're bringing on a heavy hitter, Eric Freytag, the founder of Puka Trade, an online trading community that you should be using by now. Eric and I had a really, really fun talk. He contacted me a couple of weeks ago after one of my recent videos made way into Puka Trade HQ. We got to chatting, and man, what a personable guy. You'll hear it in his voice. I pointed out right away. He's enthusiastic and passionate about both magic and the people that play it. We discuss our similar upbringings, skateboarding by day, hanging with friends by night, and the occasional concert to get the teenage angst out. Honestly, I'm stoked to have him on the show today. You guys are gonna love the energy. I think we were collectively laughing the whole time. You see, this is why we play magic, my friends. It brings us together. In no other circumstance could you laugh about a dog named Mishra, an amphibian named Fog Frog, or our old creative endeavors and their completely unplayable names. Don't worry, you'll understand what I mean by the end of the episode. So sit back, relax, and laugh along with Eric and I for the second installment of this podcast. Eric, welcome, man. I am so stoked to have you. I've only talked to you a couple of times, but so far I feel like we have a lot of things to say to each other, and we bounce off each other, and the energy is good. So thanks so much for taking some time to talk with me today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, man. I completely agree. We got a good rhythm going, and I like what you're all about.
Cheers, man. Yeah, it's nice that I think, at least from what I've heard from you so far, especially through like just audio, like we have never met, but through radio and through podcasts and things, you can actually display a lot of enthusiasm in your voice. And that's kind of necessary, I guess, to keep people's attentions high and whatnot. So, yeah, just feel your energy, man. If we want to get a little bit spiritual, a little bit green mana over here, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, basically, I'm just glad people aren't falling asleep.
Exactly. That's awesome, man. So where are you right now in the world?
So right now we're recording from Oakland, California, and I'm actually here at Puka Trade headquarters right now.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, we're downtown in Oakland. Love this town a lot. I've been living here for about 6 years, and it really feels like home.
Did you grow up in California?
No, I actually grew up in kind of the Seattle area, out in Redmond, which is a couple towns away from Seattle. Best known for the headquarters of Microsoft and a bunch of good music, actually. Modest Mouse, Blood Brothers, stuff like that.
Wow, yeah, that's a good spot. So you're coming from a legacy of very successful startups that must be happy around your aura and in your blood, right?
I hope so. I don't know.
Microsoft's a heck of a name, right?
Yeah, that's very true. Absolutely, yeah.
That's awesome. So growing up in Washington, you mentioned a couple of bands. Were you kind of like part of the music scene, or did you participate? Like, do you play any instruments? Or
man, I wish I played instruments. You know, when I was younger, I played the piano for a bit and then moved into the trombone. But for whatever reason, it never really stuck with me. And I don't know. I've always had like a deep appreciation for music and bands that make good music. But not too much like deeply involved in the scene, I guess. Other than I think going to shows and stuff and going to concerts really got me through my childhood in a lot of ways. So I guess that's the extent of it.
Yeah, of course. That's actually kind of my experience with magic. After like a couple of times trying to play it seriously, I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to watch the dudes do it, like the real good dudes do it. And I'll just sit back in the stands and cheer them on. Right?
Definitely. Yeah, absolutely. I like that a lot.
So you grew up going to shows. Like, was there a band kind of in particular that you just dug as a teenager?
Yeah, well, Modest Mouse does come to mind. I remember there's this little place called the Redmond Firehouse that was 15 minutes from my house, and there's always like cool punk and indie and alternative acts coming through there, and I remember seeing them in like a 15 person audience when I was like 15,
wow.
16 years old. Yeah, it was awesome. Like, looking back on it, that was definitely one of the highlights.
Yeah, they're so good. I mean, they're still going strong. I mean, they just released an album not too long ago, too. And that's kind of obviously bands progress in terms of sound over such a long period of time. But they still have somewhat of a like solid core just feel to them that always makes me feel good and a little bit nostalgic. I feel like their music kind of carries that sensation. You know, when I listen to the Ocean Breeze Salty, that just something speaks to me there, man.
Yeah, definitely. They're good. They're incredible songwriters. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, definitely. So what else were you doing, like, during your upbringing up in kind of Washington State?
Well, I was doing a lot of skateboarding when I was younger.
Okay.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. I actually kind of grew up in the burbs, and there wasn't all that much going on out there. You know, we were like 5 miles from the nearest 7-Eleven. So me and my buddies would basically just grab a skateboard, like, head over to the local park or school or whatever. And I don't know, I definitely spent a lot of time doing that growing up. But magic fit right into that, because you can't, you know, once it becomes dark or whatever, you got to go inside. And certainly growing up in the Pacific Northwest, you're going to get rained on 3/4 of the time. So
right.
For the times we couldn't be outside in the sun, magic definitely fit right in.
See, I knew we had too much in common, man. I grew up skateboarding as well. And luckily for me, I was in a desert, so there was never any rain. And it was always hot, always. I mean, for like 10 months out of the year. So I was always outside, which was really good. But skateboarding's so good to have that balance too, to have like skateboarding during the day, magic during the night. And did those kind of come about at the same time, or?
Yeah, I think so. It was right around when I was, 14 or 15 for the most part.
Excellent.
I think maybe it's a little narcissistic that those are the two hobbies of my choice, because I feel like both are all about failure.
Sure.
No, like, especially skateboarding. I mean, the amount of times you have to fail in order to start sticking any trick is incredible. I mean, you think about even something like an ollie or a kickflip, something pretty basic. You don't just start ollieing. You know, you got to fail over and over and over again until you finally land one. And then your ratio is like 1 in every 100, you'll get it. And then it's like 2 in every 100. And then before you know it, you have this trick in your repertoire and you've moved on to other tricks that you're failing at.
Yeah, no, I feel that. Man, the day I landed my first kickflip was monumentous. Like, I will never forget that sensation. It, just because it's such a mountain. It's like you said, it's consistent failure just to kind of, it's kind of psychotic in a way too, because you get so stoked. You watch a bunch of skateboarding videos and then you go out and try it and you're absolutely miserable. You can't even do it in the grass. You can't even do it standing still. And these guys are doing like kickflips over 10 stairs, 15 stairs, you know? And then once you land it, man, that's just the best sensation.
Yeah, you're completely right. And I definitely think there's lessons to be learned there. You know, it was a learning lesson for me, just like coping with my own failure and realizing like, look, you're not going to succeed every time. Anytime you want to start getting good at anything, you have to start by failing and work your way up from there. And I don't know, I think that was in some way formative in my life.
Yeah, cool. So did that transfer over to magic, or was magic like the relief? Like, well, I failed all day. Now let's go play some cards that I'm kind of good at.
I definitely think there's a ton of failure involved in magic. But it's funny how failure is such like a dark word, you know? In some ways, like, even if you failed and learned something, then it was a success in some way, even if you didn't win the game. But
sure,
you know, there's certainly a lot of loss involved in magic. You know, you're gonna lose a ton of your games. I was just listening to a podcast. It must have been Limited Resources, because it was LSV talking about win ratios. And he said even the best of the pros, like the top echelon of professional magic players who are arguably like the best in the world, can still only hope for like a 60% win ratio. And I was like, you gotta be kidding me. 60%, like, that's just a little bit better than a coin flip, you know?
Right, yeah. And I mean, we come from school, 60% isn't even passing. I actually noticed that I was watching the Pro Tour. I was being a little more scrupulous about the statistics that came up. And I did notice that was the common pattern, that all of these really good, Yuya Watanabe, like LSV, Sam Black, everybody that you know in the scene sits in that ratio. Like win percentage is like 60%, 63%. It's a little higher at GPs, obviously, because the skill level's a little bit more sporadic. But at Pro Tours, it's like 60%. And if that's good, then you have to readjust your sights as to how you interpret 60%.
Yeah, I completely agree. Yeah, that's definitely true. I think it's good though, you know, I think it's important that people give a little bit more attention to failure, you know, both with, you know, sort of losing with grace and failing with grace and sort of accepting it as part of life. That's going to happen. It's like, you might as well mentally prepared for it in advance, because, you know, it's something you're going to have to deal with at some point in life, you know?
Yeah, you get to celebrate it too. I follow Humans of New York, which is that photo blogger that I think everyone should hear about by now and should know. He posted a photo recently of a lady who said she was talking about her divorce, and she was talking about her ex-husband, and she was talking very highly about it, about the relationship in general. Like, she was saying that you don't have to stay married forever for the relationship to be a success. And so, of course, everyone associates divorce with a failure of a marriage, but in her eyes, even the marriage itself was a success, even though it didn't last. So, again, it could just come down to, like, are you a pessimist or an optimist, or, you know, that kind of stuff. But I do like, let's readjust the meaning and connotation of failure, especially with magic.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I think that's a cool anecdote. And I'm not familiar with that photographer, but you should definitely send me over a link or something.
Oh, man. He's such a good... Yeah, he's changing the world, man. He's someone to look up to aspire to be. Humans of New York. I'll plug him. All right, so, man, so you were skateboarding, you were playing magic. Did magic come about because of the people you were skateboarding with, or did you bring that to the group, or are they two separate groups?
You know, it was actually my buddy Colin Knight. Yeah, he gets credit for that. And in some ways, then I guess he gets credit for all of Puka Trade at the same time.
Shout out to Colin Knight.
He's like the Richard Garfield of Puka Trade.
Yeah, absolutely. But he came from a family of brothers, and I guess probably one of his older brothers introduced it to him. And I just remember there was this time I was over at his house, and he was talking about playing magic, and I was like, oh, what's that? What do you mean playing magic? And he passes me this card, and...
Which card was it? Wait, which card was it?
It was Uthden Troll.
Troll?
Yeah, it was a revised Uthden Troll. It was like, you know this card?
Do you remember
what
it does?
Yeah, dude, it's a crummy 2-2 regenerator for for red and two colorless. It's red and two colorless for a 2-2 regen, and...
Wait, it's a red troll?
Yeah.
And it regens. Okay, so trolls regen, but a red troll, that's wild.
I know. And I remember just, like, picking up the card and, like, looking at it, and almost, like, got a sense of vertigo. It was just like, wow, 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 wow.
Yes.
And in that moment, I'm like, this game looks cool.
Yeah, nice. That's so cool.
Yeah, totally. So I picked up his, I think he gave me, like, some black deck after that, just some mono black deck with, like, Royal Assassins and Abyssal Hunters and Feast of the Unicorns and, like, old Mirage era, like, beta type stuff. And
yeah, the cards that could just be double up as metal bands. You said Feast of the Unicorns, man. Holy cow.
I know. That was the best, man. I tell you, you put that on an Abyssal Hunter and you are good to go.
And especially to a 14-year-old skateboarder who's listening to, like, oh, I mean, I guess you were a little bit calm listening to Modest Mouse, but I was skateboarding at 14 listening to, like, System of a Down, you know, and so
yeah, definitely.
That's so cool. So it's nice that magic is like the only hobby I have that requires someone else to have fun with, basically. And so it's really cool when you're growing up with a bunch of your friends, you're skateboarding outside, and I think magic can bring that community sense too, especially when you guys go in after dark, like we already said. So that's awesome that it kind of matched both of your interests matched with the same group of people.
Definitely, yeah, it was really sweet. I mean, I definitely remember some of the best times of my childhood were, like, you know, when you sneak out for the weekend or whatever, go have a sleepover with your friends, and you're just playing magic till, like, 4 a.m. And I don't know, that shit was good. That we definitely had a good time with that.
Yeah, and there are a lot worse things you could be doing too. So if you're sneaking away to play magic, I mean, that's awesome. Two thumbs up for that.
For sure.
So you started back in Mirage, which I did my research. That came out in '96, and it was the first block of the, like, the block structure. So that had Mirage, Visions, and Weatherlight. So yeah, that was the beginning of the era, and now we're here with Cons being the end of the structure, like the block structure era. So you have spanned the entire block structure.
Yeah, that's true. With a big break in the middle, though.
So, yeah, like, what was that break like? So how did magic kind of drift out?
So that makes sense. If I started in 96, yeah, that makes perfect sense, because I was basically playing for 4 years. And then when I was, when 2000 rolled around, I did take a break. And I think a lot of that was because I just went off to college, and it was like, you know, I think I sort of knew how time intensive it could be to, like, be involved with magic. And I don't know, it just seemed like it was sort of, I had enough distractions in my life that, you know, the particular distraction of magic was maybe not something I needed to bring with me, or I don't know, whatever. For whatever reason, it felt like the right time to set it down, I guess. Actually, from like 2000 to 2008, I didn't really play. I would check in here or there, but I just kind of set it aside and kept all my cards. And I remember back in 2008, was right around the time Zendikar came back out. I was like, oh, let's see what this game's been up to. And I remember looking at all of the cards that have been printed and just being blown away. Like, they made the game, they didn't just make it more powerful, they made it better. You know, there were things like hybrid mana and the mechanic Landfall that, like, made it easier to cast your cards and less likely that you get mana screwed. And I don't know, I just felt like, as a whole, the game had become so much better in that time.
Yeah, of course. Anything that has the longevity there is bound to either self-destruct or kind of, I don't know, just edge out the kinks. So I think you nailed it right on. In between 2000 and 2008, I think Magic did see a lot of streamlining, and I don't know. I think we luck out in this game, I feel, because the people that make Magic also play Magic and really care about the game and making it better. You know, it's not just a product. They actually care about the experience too. So so I think that does take testament between that time frame. So Zendikar brought you back, and of course we're going back to Zendikar soon as well. Does that give you kind of like nostalgic butterflies?
Oh god, it's gonna be great. I still love Landfall to this day. I think that might be one of my favorite mechanics. It's either that or Flash or Haste, I guess.
is that because of your red origins? Like what is your color pie association in your guild?
That's such a good question. Man, I don't know. I don't know if I could narrow myself down like that. I think, you know, if you look at actually the ratio of like commander decks I have and colors of those, I'm pretty sure, what was the breakdown? I just checked this out the other day. It was green at 9. 9 of the decks have green in them. 8 have blue. 8 have red. And then 7 have black. And 5 have white.
Okay, so that's almost even with a little a predisposition towards red and green. Is that right?
Yeah, I guess blue and green. Blue and green are kind of at the top.
Oh, blue and green. Okay, yeah, sure. So how many decks total would that be? of your commander decks do you have?
I think there's 14 now. I think there's 14 commander decks.
That is the big pitfall. I just tweeted today, like, the biggest lie that anybody tells themselves if they're playing Commander is like, just one more deck. I'm just going to make one more deck. And then suddenly it's 14, you know?
This is true. Yeah, when I got back into it, I was going up to a local game store here in Berkeley and bumped into a couple guys that seemed really cool. And at that point, I still just had like 60 card casual stuff. It was like basically 60 card anything goes. I'm not going to say it was Legacy, but you could kind of use whatever you had.
Yeah, kitchen table.
Yeah, and I remember these guys were like, you should check out Commander. And I was like, or no, they said at that time it was Elder Dragon Highlander, of course.
Yeah, sure. EDH. For the sticklers out there that are particular at EDH, sure.
Yeah. And I was like, oh man, that sounds crazy. Highlander, what a crazy deck building challenge. And I actually went home and put something together. It was like this Intet aggro deck kind of thing. Next time I saw them, we all played and they actually became my core play group out here in Oakland.
Wow, excellent. So you've kind of built Puka. Are they involved with Puka Trade, or are they just you're just like your play group?
Yeah, to different degrees. They've all been super involved in it from the beginning. I remember when I first had the idea, one of the things I did was interview 25 of them, 25 of the guys in the area. We just went out for pizza and one at a time and just talked to them about the idea and said, look, this is what I'm thinking about doing. This is how I'd like it to work. Is this something you would use? What are questions or concerns you may have? Like what does make sense? What doesn't? And that was hugely formative in the whole process because they got a chance to sort of like help refine the idea and kind of make it what it was today.
That's so cool. Now, when did that start in terms of time?
Wow.
Time period.
That must have been, I'm going to say that was like 2012, back when we were doing like maybe even 2011, back when we were doing those kind of core idea forming ideas. That was way before it was even called Puka Trade. At first, it was going to be called GatherExchange.com.
Oh, wow.
That's a long tag. That's a bit of a mouthful.
I know. I'm really glad we kind of audibled into something else.
Yeah, it reminds me of when I named bands in middle school when I was in like punk bands. You know, we were like Cardboard Canoe, and then we went to like Plastic Pistol. We really liked the alliteration there. You know?
Yeah, Cardboard Canoe. I like that.
Yeah. I mean, Cardboard Canoe, it's like, on the surface, it looks good, but it does not float.
Yeah, kind of doomed to fail there.
Yeah, exactly. I guess the band had its... Once we solidified that name, we were doomed. That's cool, man. So Magic, you brought yourself back into it 2008, and then you had this crazy idea. What was the inspiration there? I'm super interested in talking about Puka's like origin as well, since it's blown up so much and had so much success. I kind of want to pick your brain as to where it came from.
Yeah, sure, totally. Well, you know, honestly, it was based on the fact that I did not want to and could not pour a bunch of money into this game. You know, the cards had become so expensive in that decade while I wasn't paying any attention, and I just realized, like, you know, even making a commander deck, you're going to sink a bunch of money into that. And, you know, I was looking at my collection and from when I was a kid and being like, God, there's no reason I should be buying more cards, you know? I have this trade binder full of awesome stuff. I have, like, these however many thousands of commons lying around. And, you know, it's just like there should be a way to leverage value out of that. And what I did not want to do is go to a dealer booth and basically take a 30% hit on my entire collection's value. I also didn't like humping the collection around to the various local game stores and trading with the same eight people every Wednesday. You know, it just the whole thing felt super inefficient, and I couldn't believe that there wasn't really a great way to do it online. You know, there's various message boards online where you're basically like, you know, doing kind of two-way trades, which is a very classic trade where you have to find people with congruent want and needs and then negotiate, you know, the best deal for each person. And, you know, that thing, that basically moves at the speed of email. And at the end of it, 2 weeks might have gone by and you didn't even, you know, the trade didn't actually end up happening. And, you know, and then on top of that, you have to trust that the other person is actually going to do what they say they're going to do and mail you the cards. And, you know, just having there be no oversight, just it felt like the wild, wild west. And I just realized there's so much inefficiency baked into that process. So in a lot of ways, Puka Trade was a way to kind of address each of those things.
Yeah, okay. So I think that's where the most brilliant ideas and most obvious ideas come from at the same time. I feel like, I don't know, when Facebook came about, it was just like an oh, duh moment. You know, that's obviously something that we could use and that we need, but we weren't aware of it. And so when brilliant minds shed light onto those empty spaces, it just makes sense. It's almost like, oh my God, I could have had that idea myself. You know, it becomes that simple. And when it's that simple, that's usually mark of like a good, successful kind of idea and service, I suppose. So you had this revelation. You wanted to do Puka Trade. Did you just like quit your job right away, or?
No, not at all. It was actually quite a while before I was able to do that. A lot of it was just pouring, you know, a ton of hours into the site's first steps. I mean, there was that sort of lengthy interview process where the idea was sort of forming from a nebula into something a little bit more solid. The execution was a big part of it as well. And I actually went through a few different development teams before landing on the guys that we're working with right now. And, you know, it was just mostly, I think the problem was a lot of the developers that I met didn't play Magic, and they didn't see, I don't think they could, there's a certain type of satisfaction you get when you build a product that you know you would want to use, you know? And I think a lot of the guys that I had started out with first, just, they didn't get that, right? They saw that, that I was excited about the product and the idea of using it, and that, you know, if, you know, in the early days, you know, 25 of my friends were trading on the site, and then that grew into 100 and 300, you know, that's something I think that excited me very much, but it's not necessarily something that they got any joy out of, for not having, you know, not being able to participate in it, not playing the game. So it was somewhat early on, actually, that I realized that for this thing to succeed, it has to be a community effort, that is owned and operated by people in the Magic community. And I think that's part of the reason we've had so much success, is that everyone on the team cares so much, both about Magic and the Magic community and making it a better place and making it a more accessible game. And, you know, with that as one of our core values, I think it's really paid dividends for us.
Yeah, it's super, like you said, it's a huge difference when someone's just in it for the business side and has no interest, or like, if I were to go out and try and start like a baseball team, I don't care about baseball. So that team's going to fail, you know? But if I pour my heart and soul in, I love baseball more than anything else in the entire world, then it's going to succeed, right?
Yeah.
So you kind of got the team together. Where did Puka Trade as the name come about? Because we know it's GatherExchange.com, or what was it before?
At one point, yeah. But you know what? It's all about the card Puka's Mischief. I was looking at that card, and you know, of course, that's a blue enchantment for four, and it says at the beginning of each player's upkeep, that player may exchange a permanent in play with someone else.
Oh, okay. So it's a card. I didn't even do my research to think about it. So is it spelt the same way, P-U-C-A?
Yep, absolutely. Oh, okay. Yeah. There's three cards with the word Puka in them. There's Pooka's Mischief, Cemetery Pooka, and Crag Pooka. But okay. And they're all sort of like shapeshifter kind of things. But Pooka's Mischief, I think, is the most apropos.
Yeah, that's perfect, man. That is really cool. And it's an enchantment. How fitting, I guess, because I feel like, you know, internet sites could be enchantments if magic were real life and where the creature is, like, benefiting from the enchantment, you know?
I like that. That's good, yeah.
That's cool. So a Pooka is a shapeshifter, then, in the world of magic?
The Pooka is actually, it's a mythical creature from Irish folklore. And it's sort of like this whimsical horse goblin that sort of changes things when your back is turned. And in Celtic culture, it's actually kind of revered, and they leave a portion of the crops out for the Pooka, I think after November 7th or something like that.
Okay, so Pooka's Mischief, is that right?
Yep, that's right.
Man, that's so cool. You see, I think there are two cards. You know, like most businesses, they frame their first dollar owned. What you need is an Ushra troll?
Uthden troll.
Uthden troll. You need a framed Uthden troll and a framed, I don't know if you guys have one already, but a framed Pooka's Mischief, that'd be cool.
You know, I actually tried to find that the other day, and...
Through Pooka Trade?
No, I mean, that'd be awesome if we had original art on there.
Yeah, oh, you mean the original art. Oh, I was just talking about the card.
Oh, got it. Yeah, no, actually, I do have the first Pooka's Mischief traded on Pooka Trade in my binder.
Man, that's so cool. That's a story.
Yeah, definitely. But in terms of the original art, I actually contacted the guy, the artist, of course, Scott Altman, I believe is his name. And there is no original version. I guess it was like a digital print or something. So unfortunately, the original art doesn't exist, but it's a shame. I'd love to see that thing framed.
Yeah, of course. And you guys, more than anyone else, deserve it. So we'll have to start a campaign or something. That's the next Indiegogo.
Yeah, right.
So right now, Pooka Trade is lifting off. It's had a lot of success. How many guys are working? Like, what's the behind the scenes, kind of like the Pooka workshop?
Right, yeah. We got 12 people on the team right now, which is pretty sweet. There's I think 9 of them are currently on our About page, and we just hired 3 more to help out with case resolution. So it's awesome to see it growing like that, and I don't know, we're all working pretty hard to make it the best it can be, you know?
Yeah, of course, and 12 is such a nice number. You guys can go out for beers or pizza afterwards. It's a good team. Everyone knows each other. I think 12, like between 12 and 16, when I studied abroad, there was 16 of us, and we called each other, like, we're the sweet 16, but there's such a cool group identity about that, and I think it's just a great number for an amount of people to be working towards kind of like a similar goal.
Yeah, absolutely. And the team is awesome. Everyone gets along so well. And of course, we all have, you know, magic. Everyone who's on the team, like, loves magic. And we all have that kind of between us, that common bond. But I don't know. I think one of the things that I know Mitch and I always talk about is just how surprised we are at how well it all worked together, you know? I don't know if you know this, but Mitch reached out to me during our last Indiegogo project when we were trying to raise funds to get out of the beta stage of development. And, you know, he's basically like, hey, I just saw your Indiegogo project. Seems pretty cool. We're a bunch of developers that have an office here downtown, and we all play Magic. You should come by some Friday and play. And, I was like, oh, how cool is that? And I popped by, and we all got along so well, and it was just so easy and natural. And next thing you knew, like, we were all working together and building what you see today. So, I don't know. I there's not a day goes by without me being incredibly appreciative for all the awesome folks that help out to make this what it is.
Yeah, we call magic magic, but we have to remember that after the colon comes the gathering, right? And so I think that kind of pays testament to the origins, I suppose. Just we all gather around, and then suddenly we all have a common interest and a goal. So you went to college. What is your background then? Are you like a computer programmer, or did you study something else?
No. Yeah, I actually got a degree in film and rhetoric studies.
Okay, so you were interested in movies.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And actually, after I graduated, I started working as a freelance video editor in Seattle. And I was doing that for a while. And then when I moved down to Oakland, I actually started a silk screening company with a friend from college. And it was kind of cool. I don't know if you know Woot.com, but it's the type of thing where they offer a different something every day. We were doing something sort of similar, but with shirts. And it would basically would offer like sort of like think of it as like a pre-sale of shirts for a week.
Okay.
And then basically any artist could submit a shirt to the site. It was called the We Are Signs Project. And if you have a cool design for a shirt that you want to see silkscreened, we would take it and work with it and kind of like make the colors match and make everything, you know, perfect for the silkscreening format. And then in the meantime, we would all kind of campaign together to get people aware of the shirt. And if they wanted to buy it, they could put a pre-order in, and then we'd print it for them on the spot. It was sort of like a way to address the main problem with making clothes, and that like the act of holding inventory is incredibly expensive. You know, you have to like there's a lot of upfront costs involved in sort of like purchasing the shirts and then printing on them, and then some of them don't sell. And yeah, I don't know. It was a fun project. I was doing that from like 2008 to 2010 or so.
Okay, so while you're printing shirts, you're also realizing a lot of I don't know, like goals and desires in the Magic community at the same time. So you have these two kind of, I don't know, parallels, and they're all creative endeavors, I feel. I mean, at the heart, Puka is a creative endeavor. You graduated with film. That's obviously a creative side of you. So that's cool when all those things synchronize. I just like to know where people come from in terms of those kinds of things, because you read about, I don't know, all sorts of successful people, and their origins are completely separate. Like Einstein, of course, was working as a patent agent. He was like doing patents while he was like fantasizing about, you know, the speed of light. And so, but those things have nothing to do with each other, you know?
Yeah, I think it's true. And, you know, I think if you grab any one person on the street, that person has a ton of different talents, you know? They probably have a bunch of different things that they're interested in and involved in. And I don't know, I feel like the world's the best place when everyone has the opportunity to sort of follow their interests and passions, even if they're changing minute to minute.
Now, So today's Monday. You guys were in the office. What's a typical day in the office like at Puka Trade? Is there like ping pong tables and candy and, you know?
Magic cards just flowing from the roof?
Yeah. Do you guys just play Magic all day? Am I unveiling the secret?
No. You know, I think one thing that's super important to us is the notion of freedom. I think that's something. There's definitely a current of that in the core values that we've talked about here on the team, and certainly what we try to live by. And we don't have official hours. No one here has official hours. And it's just, you know, you come in whenever you want and stay as long as you want. And I think that kind of always serves as a reminder that everyone who's here and involved in this project is here of their own free will and their own accord. And I really feel like that's how not just all businesses should be, but that's how all people should get to live. And there's just so much freedom in that, and sort of like waking up whenever you want, not having to, you know, crunch some alarm, and just, you know, at the same time, like being responsible for your work and your involvement in a project that you love. So yeah, in terms of like a typical day at the office, you know, there's people flowing in, there's people flowing out. Usually there's we'll start off the day by just, you know, chatting with some coffee about the most recent Magic news or new cards that people are excited about, new spoilers.
Yeah, cool.
And then eventually, you know, someone's like, hey, what are we doing today?
So we're here to work, right?
Yeah. So, and then we usually kind of crank out from like, I don't know, roughly 10 to 6. If I had to talk about a specific schedule that we're in the office, usually around that. But then there's some people who stay later, and then some people who leave earlier. And, you know, I don't know. It's a very free place, you know?
Yeah, that's really killer. And it shows that if you're there, it's because you want to be there.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah.
And that energy just cultivates a huge work environment. I love that. That's cool.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. In terms of the Magic that gets played, we usually host a Magic night here at the office every Tuesday night. And then sometimes on Friday Tuesday night around like 6:30 or whatever. And then occasionally Fridays, we'll take a half day at 3 and start playing. But so we still get a chance to actually, you know, play cards, not just because we definitely look at cards all day, you know.
Right. Yeah. So that's actually interesting. I always worry about blending my hobbies with work, and I always imagine like people at Wizards would end up just hating the game. I'm always surprised when people at Wizards actually still play Magic, because that's what they do for a living. And so so that's cool. So you guys actually still play and enjoy the game.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's crucial. We have to. We have to remind ourselves what we're doing this for.
Yeah, that's righteous. That's so cool. So one thing that I was impressed about Puka from the beginning was, and the beginning for me was like a month ago since I got back into Magic, but was that you guys are not trying to hide anything. It feels like all of you guys, you can see photos of everybody that works on the team. You are very upfront about your image. You make videos with your face. Even the first time we Skyped, you turn on the video aspect of it, and that's nice, and that's something that's so huge from a consumer standpoint about a business. If you're looking at a business and they have a face associated with the name, that shows a lot of confidence and, you know, that you believe in your product. A lot of video, I don't know, I visit a lot of sites that I have no idea who's working on the other side, and there's no, you know, direct contact or direct person associated with the site. So I guess my question here is, like, what are there risks or rewards for putting, you know, what are the risks and rewards for putting your face in conjunction with BookaTrade?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess that's a good question. I don't think I ever necessarily thought about it in terms of risks and rewards so much as just like kind of like just the right thing to do, I guess. It's just I think it was just something that felt right in the sense that, you know, people have a lot of questions and dialogue about how to use the site. What happens if X happens? Then when do I do Y? And, you know, I don't know. They're not talking to some faceless corporate entity. They're talking to like me or Tim or, you know, one of the guys on the team that's specifically here to help for that. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't think it was like a calculated decision for us to, you know, have a lot of, you know, clarity around who we are and our images, I guess. It just felt like what was right and appropriate.
Yeah, sure. It just felt natural.
Yeah.
That's cool. I see that a lot in YouTubing. It just felt natural for me to be in front of a camera, but some YouTubers really, you know, they enjoy their space and their anonymity, and I don't know who they are. I don't even know their first name, you know, so I guess it kind of depends on personal preference. But have you had a celebrity experience yet? Kind of like, oh, you're Eric from BookaTrade.
No. Yeah, nothing like that. I mean, I think if there's any celebrity status involved in this project, it should be reserved for the platform itself. You know, it is, you know, the platform is kicking ass, frankly, if I can say the word ass.
Yeah, no, we can. It's our show. We can say ass.
Yeah, good, good. I mean, we're on track to facilitate our millionth trade in a couple months here.
Yeah, I've been actually noticing that that tracker is so fun. I'm a huge stats guy, so.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's crazy to see. Man, I'm going to have such a huge party when we hit a million trades. It's such an awesome benchmark, you know?
When do you think that'll come?
I think we're going to hit it in a couple months.
Perfect.
It might be right around the time that GP Vegas is going on.
Oh, holy cow. Now that'll be a celebration. That'll be a party.
Yeah, that'll be nuts. That'll be nuts.
Yeah, and we get to celebrate the summer, like bringing the millionth trade. Man, that's so cool.
Yeah, totally. And I think it just highlights that, you know, there's no one person that deserves credit for all this. You know, there's like the development team, the case resolution team, everyone on Team BookaTrade, and everyone who trades on the site with integrity, and everyone who's like helped spread the word to get it as far as it has come. So it's super, super exciting to see this upcoming milestone there.
Yeah, we all get to throw our hands in the air in celebration for that. You're right, it's a big community built, you know, operation and success. So that's awesome. So what are the goals now? You have your Indiegogo project, and that's depending on when this airs, nearly over or over. What else are you looking forward to in the future, like, you know, the couple of years upcoming for Puka?
Yeah, so just to touch on the Indiegogo project, I think these five features are big. They're going to be taking up a lot of our focus for, you know, for at least the first part of this year. And that, you know, that's the five big features are support for condition, non-English cards, quantity, responsive mobile design, and then, of course, Magic Online. Like, these are big projects that kind of touch everything on the site. I think in a world where we got those five things hammered out, BookaTrade gets a huge upgrade, you know? So largely we're kind of focusing on that stuff. But, you know, I think once those five features are developed and we've nailed them down and, you know, we feel confident about where they're at, I think then we stop with like the sort of expansion of the site, where instead of like trying to like support new cards or you know, have support for condition or non-English cards or stuff like that, then we get to kind of look at the progress we've made and dial into a bunch of features that we've already built. You know, we get to look at every page of the site and say, like, is this working perfectly from a user experience standpoint? Like, is the import tool really easy and intuitive to use? Like, does it always do exactly what we want it to do, you know? Also, there's some things about trading on the site that we want to address a little bit as well. Like, right now there's, all the cards are sort of the cards that you have the ability to send are, governed by the phenomenon we kind of tongue in cheek call survival of the clickest, right?
Sure.
And that's where, of course, like it's very egalitarian in that whoever finds the trade, finds the card to send out on the send a card page and clicks first gets it, you know? And I think that's really cool in a lot of ways. I really like that on the site. Really, the competition is to be the one to give the card away rather than the competition to receive it or whatever. I think that's one thing that that has always surprised me and other people as they experience the site for the first time is just how much surplus there is in this game. And I think it speaks to sort of one of the original reasons I've made it, which is, of course, that we all have these huge collections that are worth a ton of money, but it's hard to move the cards. So, I guess I got a little off track there, but mostly what I'm trying to say is the survival of the clickest thing is great because, again, it's egalitarian and it gives everyone essentially the same, the same opportunity to get a trade. But I think it also gives certain advantages to people who are able or willing to click that refresh button to try to find the newest trade there a little bit more. So we'd like to take a really close look at that and think, well, how can we spread it out a little bit, you know? It's great that, the people that want the trades the most are the ones who get them, but I think also, like, baseline, it would be cool if everyone got one trade a month on the site. Like, that seems super achievable, you know? And it still feels like the egalitarian core can still be there, but what if you just got dibs on one card every month, you know?
It kind of reminds me of building an EDH deck. So you have 100 single cards and you scan over, thousands of cards to make the first original 100 cut, and then you play it a couple times and realize like 20 of those cards don't work. And then you change out the 20 cards, and this is kind of what you're doing with the site. You have all these features, and now we want to like precisely narrow every single card or feature. And so then you kind of like scan through your deck and say, what does this card do? Does it matter? And is this the absolute best card that could be in this slot?
Yeah. That's exactly right. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like refining a deck. You know, you have the deck, you have all the cards sitting there, and then you're like, you become a little bit more scrupulent.
Yeah. Totally. And that's exactly, I think, the stage we'll be at. Once we develop all the features that are kind of under the umbrella of this Indiegogo project.
Yeah, that's killer. I can't stop saying that's so cool. I'm sorry for the repetition, man, but this is so cool. I'm stoked on it.
Awesome, man. Yeah, it's all so right. Cool to hear.
So a couple more ideas. So your motto is given, let give. Like, where did that come from? Because I know that as a reference to a bunch of things, but where did that specifically come from with you guys?
It was just a phrase that kind of stood out in my head as being really appropriate, given both the ethos of the site, and how it worked from a mechanical standpoint. You know, it's like you on Puka Trade, you give, and then you let other people give to you in return, it has a very nice ethos, you know. Of course, it's sort of a play on the phrase live and let live, which I like that ethos a lot too.
But, right.
I think it does. One thing that was always really important to me is that whatever sort of slogan or catchphrase that we had did in some way touch on the idea of the gift, because fundamentally Puka Trade is a gift economy. It is a gift economy. I like that that catchphrase kind of alludes to that.
Yeah, it's great. It rolls off the tongue, you know.
Good. That's good.
So give and let give with Puka Trade. Eric, what else is going on in life? Like, what? I mean, obviously magic is very encompassing, especially when it blends in with your work. But what's your favorite thing right now? Like TV show or thing that you're doing if you're outside, maybe skateboarding still?
Yeah, no, I wish I skateboarded more. I think, my favorite thing outside of life, I think it's got to be my dog, actually.
Okay, what's the dog's name?
His name is Mishra.
Mish? Oh, of course it is.
I don't know if that counts as outside of magic then.
Pseudo, almost 6 out of 10. No, it's a great dog name. What kind of dog is it?
He's a champ. He's a husky, yeah.
Oh, man, the lady killer there.
Yeah, so him and I, we go on a lot of walks, we go on a lot of runs, and...
Is he a frisbee dog?
You know, I cannot get that dog to chase anything.
He
just won't do it. Yeah, when he's inside, he's sleeping, and when he's outside, he just likes walking around. But, I remember there's this point in early on when I got him, when I was, like, trying to get him to fetch, you know, and I was like, God, I really just want this dog to learn how to fetch. And then all of a sudden I was like, wait a minute, like, why do I care if the dog fetches, you know?
You had a very, like, existential, like, moment there.
No, I know, totally. It's like, usually you play fetch with the dog because it wants to fetch. If my dog doesn't want to fetch, I don't need to fucking kill myself to try to get it to learn.
Yes. Just live and let live, man.
And Mishra doesn't want to connect.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's righteous. So is Mishra like the, is he hanging around the office? Is he the Puka pet?
Yeah, I'm looking at him right now. He's fast asleep on the floor.
Sounds like a great dog. That's great. I can't say that's so cool anymore. That's amazing.
Yeah, he's a champ.
Killer. Okay, so my last question is something I do it with every guest, and it is simply, what is your favorite Magic card ever printed, and why?
That is a tough question right there. That's really hard. I think, though, for me, man, it's got to be Spore Frog.
Spore Frog. Okay, what does it do, and what set is it from?
Spore Frog is a 1/1 green creature for one, and it says, sacrifice Spore Frog. Creatures deal no damage this turn. So affectionately known as Fog Frog.
Is it green or is it blue?
It's green. It's green.
Okay. Sometimes the frogs are blue, but wow. Fog Frog.
Yeah, the first set, it was first printed in, I want to say Prophecy, I believe, is the one with the little crystal. Yeah, that should be Prophecy.
Are you running Fog Frog in any of your EDH decks?
I am, yeah. It's most at home in my Savra EDH deck, which is kind of a green-black recursion. And, of course, like Sacrifice Outlets. So what that deck's really doing is it's sacrificing all the, you know, creatures in play whenever it wants to get value out of Savra, and then kind of bringing them back with, like, Twilight's Call and Living End and Living Death. And just like all of the best black recursion, right? But yeah, the best part with Spore Frog is that, you know, once you start recurring fog effects over and over in a commander setting, you know, it's a huge hurdle for the other players to have to get around.
Right, yeah. And somehow Spore Frog, is this because, like, how much is this just because you affectionately love the card versus its utility?
Oh, at least 50%.
Okay, that's what EDH is all about, man. You got to run Spore Frog if you love it.
Yeah, this is the truth.
The Fog Frog. Okay, I'm going to have to look up a couple of cards. Eric, thanks so much, man. I just love talking to you, so thanks so much for hanging out with me for the last hour.
Yeah, right back at you, Sam. It's been an awesome time, and I can't wait to watch more of your videos as they get produced.
Yes, I got a plug from Buka Trade. Listen, everyone, listen to that. All right, say bye to Mishra for me. We'll talk soon, brother.
All right, take care.
Yes, 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 yes. That was just such a good talk. Did you guys enjoy that? I enjoyed that quite a bit. Lots of good energy, lots of positive vibes coming from Mr. Eric Freytag. Loved that. Loved his company. Loved what he's all about. I hope you guys check out Buka Trade. If you do, I won't mind plugging myself a little bit in the description. Of course, there will be a little bit of a referral link if you want to help me out and get me a couple of extra Puka points if you want to sign up and whatnot. Anyway, I did search up his Puka cards. There are a few in Magic, and they do allure very, very well to the Irish folklore that he was talking about. The Puka cards themselves look like horses. They are shapeshifters. They are really, really cool. And what a cool idea, just to kind of invent a website out of the flavor of a Magic card. Brilliant. Magic players are brilliant. Anyway, I do use this space to talk about me for just a second before I sign off. I've been running a lot. Today was like the first day of the year in Colorado where we had quite a bit of sun, and it felt spring. It felt good. The vigor of summer is coming. I can feel it. I can feel it in my bones. It felt good to get some vitamin D. So I went outside and I ran. I run every single day. Lately, I've just been committed to running. I've always been a runner, but at the beginning of February, I really, really committed to getting 6 to 7 runs a week. So that felt really good. I would love to be able to run about 40 to 50 miles a week. Right now I'm sitting, last week I just finished like my best week of running ever, which was 35 to 37. I think I hit 37 miles. Yeah, I did hit 37 miles. So that's like 5 miles a day, a little over 5 miles a day, which feels really good. But my bar is very high because I worked with some cross-country runners from the University of New Hampshire this summer, or past summer, and they were pushing like 70 to 80 miles a week. That's like 10 miles a day. I follow a YouTuber who does 100, 120 miles a week, which is insane. So my goals are very, very high. So I'm just going to keep running. I suggest you do it, man. Just put on a podcast. I like to listen to lots of Magic podcasts while I run. They kind of make the suffering a little bit less intense, but it takes your mind to a really good place. It cleans me. At least it feels really good for me. So I highly suggest you go out there and run. All right. Hey, episode 2 down. If you're enjoying the show, let me know in the comments. I love the support, guys. Thanks so much for listening. This has been Magic People with the Magic Man Sam. I will talk to you next week. Cheers.